I'd like to welcome to Crossover this morning a unique guest. His name is Jet Hitt, and he is, first and foremost, a composer who's written a work for violin and orchestra entitled Yellowstone. However, his lifestyle is quite different from any other composer we know of. Welcome, Jet Hitt.
Thanks, Jill. It's nice to be here.
Now, you have to tell our audience what you also do, okay?
I'm an outfitter in Yellowstone National Park. I offer anywhere from a half-day to six-day pack trips on horseback in the remote backcountry.
You also are a composer of note. You've got quite a background in music. You teach as well, or you did teach, certainly.
Yeah, I was at Sam Houston for 1 year. I taught at Idaho State for 4 years, and I taught in Germany for a couple of years as well, a long time ago.
Well, tell our audience a little bit about your background. You are actually a composer, and you're a musician, and amongst other things, so tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I did my undergraduate at the University of Arkansas, and then began my master's degree at Louisiana State University, and finished it up at East Texas State University, and thereafter I did my doctorate at the University of Kentucky. And actually, the piece that we're talking about, the first movement of that was my dissertation at the University of Kentucky.
You also taught in Germany, didn't you, in Austria?
I studied in Austria as an undergraduate. Right after the Berlin Wall came down, I went into the former East Germany, and there I actually taught American literature and conversation, American history, a number of things, just things that people who had been in the former Soviet Republic were interested in. And I was there for a couple of years right after reunification.
But you grew up, certainly, in the, I guess, the environment that you're living in now, pretty much. I mean, you were born in Arkansas. You grew up there. Was it on a ranch or near a ranch?
Yeah. My family was a family of ranchers that became dairy farmers out of necessity. But, yeah, I'm very much comfortable in the cowboy world. I think I was six when I got my first horse, and I grew up riding and breaking and training horses, and, music was sort of the anomaly, not really the cowboy life, if you want to look at it that way.
Well, when did that happen? I mean, you really were serious about it.
It happened at a very young age. Probably one of the biggest influences in my life came along when I was about 7 years of age, and that was John Denver. I was crazy about the man's music and totally smitten. And then later, what made me decide that I wanted to be a composer, when I was about 10 years old, Star Wars came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just completely smitten by that music. Ironically, I didn't see the film until many, many years later. The nearest movie theater was about 50 miles away. And, there was no way my dairy farming father was going to drive 50 miles to see some outer space movie. And the other big influence early on, an uncle bought me a set of Herbert von Karajan performing the Bach Brandenburg Concertos. And I thought those things were about the finest things I'd ever heard. And, honestly, I'm not real sure I've changed my mind about that.
But I guess I'm naive in the sense that being an Easterner, and I guess going out to the suburban area is already, it's already a shock for us culturally here. You live in an environment that is so incredible, I would think. And you grew up, of course, as a rancher, as you say, on a farm you've lived the outdoor life, but of course, you are a highly educated gentleman. You were inspired by the beauty that surrounds you to write this Yellowstone, which is a work for violin and orchestra. And I think it's rather intriguing for people from the East Coast, the busyness of the city and, of course, the cultural climate here, which is so very, very vast and crowded, and also there's a great deal of opportunity here to hear a lot of music. This is kind of a, we stand in awe of you being so inspired, you know, to continue on with your music and to as well maintain a business that that is so not connected to that world. So again, it's fascinating. I think your works, your composition here, this work for violin and orchestra, which, by the way, you dedicated to Anna Sophie Mutter, I see.
That's correct.
Yeah, is very much to me. I listened to it and enjoyed it very, very much. Like, I want to say this not in a negative way. It's what we interpret now as film music. There is something about it that is very descriptive. It's very programmatic. It's very inspiring. And I think it falls into that category in a sense that you're describing something, and you're describing it with the techniques of many of the great film composers, someone even like John Williams, I would say. So I guess what you saw in the movies really stuck with you. But was that your intent? I mean, do you have a style that you write in? Do you? I know you certainly are interested in jazz as well. Tell us a little bit about that and what you wanted to say in this particular work.
Sure. Well, you kind of hit exactly on what's been a big crusade in my career as a composer. You know, when I was 18 years old, coming from a rather provincial background, with a lot of, well, J.S. Bach in my head and John Williams, and I went to the university, I was shocked and appalled at what was being passed off as music, all of this experimental stuff that, frankly, just didn't appeal to me. It still doesn't. I first and foremost think that the listener should enjoy the experience and get something out of it. And philosophically, as I look at it, I think what the sounds that are coming out of Hollywood, I mean, that's what music sounds like in my time. I think what's going on at the university is, by contrast, rather artificial. You know, if you go back to the time of Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, those men's music sound remarkably alike. You always recognize it as being the classical period, and I think in the future that people will look back at this time and Hollywood is going to be the sound that's remembered.
Really?
I personally think that's the language of my time. And so, yeah, I was definitely influenced by that. And, of course, I mean, I've obviously been influenced by everything I've ever heard, I suppose. But I suppose that Yellowstone is a statement about what I believe musically.
Well, Yellowstone, and I've never been there, by the way. I would imagine the vastness of this is overwhelming. The Yellowstone, the park, is absolutely overwhelming. And is it still as pristine as it was? Is there danger? Is there some kind of ecological threat that is going to impact on Yellowstone National Park?
Well, yeah, that's a can of worms. But, I mean, the biggest problem with Yellowstone National Park are just the nasty politics surrounding it. And, well, I'll give you an example. Currently, there's a big movement to delist the Yellowstone grizzly bear. And, well, essentially what's really going on is the administration wants to open up the grizzly bear's habitat to oil and gas exploration.
Okay, yes.
And, you know, those are the kinds of nasty politics that we get up here when, in reality, in the last 6 years, the Yellowstone grizzly bear has been in decline. Mainly due to cub-bearing females being run over on the road.
Yeah, is there a lot of activity around there? I'm sure it would be. It's a big tourist site.
It's a very big tourist site. Fortunately, Yellowstone is so vast that less than 1% of the population ever even gets off the road, or I should say the visitors. So, you know, when I go into the backcountry, we don't see just too many people, the occasional park ranger and perhaps another outfitter. But it's still pretty much a virgin wilderness.
That must be rather dangerous then. I understand wilderness is very dangerous.
Well, there are certainly mountain lions and grizzly bears and black bears, bull elk, bull moose, some ornery critters, no doubt about it.
Yeah, but what about getting lost in the wilderness? I've heard that is also rather imposing.
Well, yeah, but that usually happens to the neophyte traveler. I don't I have never truly been lost in Yellowstone. I mean, I've gotten off. I mean, if you spend some time in the mountains, you always have points of reference. There, you know, a peak in the distance or something. You might not know exactly where you are, but you have a pretty good idea.
But you grew up in some kind of environment that taught you how to survive, and I would imagine the work that you do, which is fascinating, you know, has a bit of that in it. I mean, you know where you're going, you know probably the trails that you take, but I'm sure that you are always affected on some level by the enormity of this place.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think I really tried to capture that in the first movement of the concerto. The place never ceases to blow me away.
Yeah, I must tell you, you did. You absolutely did capture it, because you have the serenity in certain parts. You have the edge of danger also in your music, because you're describing what's going on there. And as I say, the enormity of it, and the beauty of it, and the serenity of it, and then all the other aspects that really are part of this amazing place, and you do get it. So here now, the first movement of Yellowstone by Jet Hit. The violin soloist is František Novotný, and the orchestra is the Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Kirk Trevor. We've just heard the first movement of Yellowstone, entitled Yellowstone. This is a work for violin and orchestra, the composer Jet Hit, the soloist on this recording, František Novotný, performing with the Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra, Kirk Trevor conducting. The composer is our guest today on Crossover. Now, how come you chose the violin as a solo instrument, or that you even made it a work for solo instrument and orchestra?
That came about sort of as a fluke more than anything. The first time I visited Yellowstone, I immediately began that work when I got back home and wrote the introduction and got to this big onerous pause, and I really had no idea what came next, and I didn't know what came next for quite a long while. I was working on my dissertation, or not my dissertation, my coursework at the University of Kentucky. And at the time, Anna-Zofi Mutter's recording of the Sibelius Violin Concerto came out, mm-hmm. which was a work that honestly had never really thrilled me, but I got that recording and it just blew me away.
Yes.
After a while, another connection, which was that Dunraven Pass in Yellowstone and Anna-Zofi Mutter's violin are both named for the same man. And
really?
Yeah, and sort of this connection, I don't know. I eventually hit upon the idea of making it a violin concerto and dedicating it to her. And the violin, the more I thought about it, it was the perfect instrument to describe Yellowstone's serene beauty and, at the same time, its unforgiving viciousness.
Yes, well, that's right there, I tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the way it unfolded, but it was what made the most sense to me.
Does she know your work? You must have sent it to her, and of course, as you dedicated it to her, did she have any response?
You know, I honestly don't even know whether she knows about it. I sent it to her, and I promptly got it back with a letter from the secretary, and you know, wishing me well, and the usual. So I don't honestly know if she even ever saw it.
Interesting, very interesting. Well, that must have been a little bit of a blow, but I guess when you pour your heart out and somebody says thank you very much, you know, we wish you the best. I guess it's a little bit unnerving. However, you're very, very honest in terms of what you have to say musically here. I just explain a little bit just about the movements. First,
okay.
It's Yellowstone, then it's Dunraven. That's your second movement. That was inspired by a horseback ride, you said?
Correct. That was a horseback ride that one of my riding partners and I took up through the northern part of the park. And it was a dreary, rainy day. But it was just a beautiful ride. And as we got to higher elevation, the rain turned to snow. And through a mishap that's, well, too involved to explain here, we wound up riding way into the night. And at some point, we were way up top, and it was snowing, and there were cars streaming over Dunraven Pass, their lights sort of fused together, making almost like a serpentine light coming down. And at some point, I looked up, and there was the sky on one side with a full moon, and on the other side, it was snowing and snowflakes floating all around Amanda. It was just a beautiful, gorgeous moment in the park that I will never forget.
And then it's hoodoos. What is hoodoos?
The hoodoos, that's a region in the Mammoth Hot Springs area. Mammoth Hot Springs is defined by travertine terraces, and there is an extinct terrace mountain there that throughout the region's many earthquakes has just crumbled and rolled down the hill, creating this really mysterious region. I do a half-day ride through there all the time, and it's just one of the most remarkable places I've ever been. It was just awe-inspiring to me the first time I went there, and it never ceases to amaze me. And that's kind of, well, I tried to describe what a ride through the hoodoos was like, and you know, just capture some of the feelings that I had there.
Now, this was recorded where?
I recorded this with the Slovak Radio Symphony in Bratislava in the Slovak Republic.
Mm-hmm. And the violinist is excellent. František Novotný?
Correct, yeah. He is a Czech violinist, apparently fairly well known in the Czech Republic.
How was it accepted by that audience?
It was just recorded. In fact, the work has never actually been premiered. We recorded it in four closed studio sessions. And, well, I'll have to say that the orchestra was ecstatic about it.
Oh, it's a wonderful performance.
Yeah, it was really a lot of fun. By the second recording session, I had all of these orchestral members coming up to the recording studio where I was sitting. With their photo albums, they'd been to Yellowstone and were really high on the American West. And it was very gratifying. The orchestra really got into it when we recorded it.
So part of the proceeds of this actually are donated to the Yellowstone Association. What is that?
The Yellowstone Association is just an association within Yellowstone National Park, that is, its principal purpose is to educate visitors about the park and just for the basic promotion and well-being of Yellowstone.
So how do you view yourself here? I mean, you are not a study in contrast exactly, but I've never known a cowboy that composed a symphonic work, so I'm sure that a lot of people feel that way about you.
Well, you know, I mean, I was sort of born a cowboy. There was no way around it. That was the lifestyle I was born into. And I left that for many years and pursued a university career. But now, well, I think above all else, I view myself as an ambassador for Yellowstone National Park. Mm-hmm. And next to that, you know, okay, I'm a composer. I don't get to write a lot anymore. Honestly, I'm so consumed with the various facets of the business that I'm running that I don't have a lot of time for it. But I don't know. You know, if at this point in time, it seems to me that the best thing that I can do is do everything I can do to preserve Yellowstone National Park. And that's my number one priority.
And you feel that it is threatened at all or that it could just use a little TLC?
Oh, I most definitely think that it's threatened.
Yes.
I think the political and commercial forces in this country are looking at this place thinking we'd like to drill for oil there. And with the oil crunch that we're starting to experience that will inevitably just get worse, I fear that there will come a day when that's exactly what happens.
You really think so?
Yeah, I probably do. I hate to be pessimistic about that, but It seems almost inevitable to me if we don't find an alternative energy source.
And is there a threat of other great parks or environmentally threatened areas as well in the rest of the United States, do you feel?
Well, I'm certainly an environmentalist. We're pumping the sky full of pollution every day. You just have to, if you can imagine, for me to go from this pristine wilderness area and go to a city, I mean, it's just, it's smothering. You can't even hardly breathe. And it's amazing to me that we're not really trying to do anything about this.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because you are really coming from heaven, basically, there. It's exquisite and, as you say, pristine. The air is different. And how about the animals? Are they still flourishing there?
Yeah, Yellowstone is large enough that the animals are really doing quite well. In fact, most listeners will probably remember that Yellowstone burned in 1988.
Yes.
And the only species that hasn't thrived and done better since that time is the Yellowstone moose. And that's just because much of its habitat was destroyed. But even the moose is doing okay. By and large, the only animal I see in Yellowstone that's truly threatened is the grizzly bear.
When you say grizzly bear, people are very frightened of the grizzly bear. Is the bear an animal that will attack without provocation?
Well, let me preface that by saying that grizzly bears are very unpredictable. But statistically speaking, in Yellowstone, you have a better chance of being killed by Indians than you do bears. The current score is Indians 7, bears 5. And if you think about in the park's 130-some-odd-year history, 5 bear fatalities, it's probably not the great big vicious animal that we make it out to be, which, don't get me wrong, it is the perfect killing machine. But less than 25% of its diet is meat. It is not principally a carnivore. The biggest problems with bears in Yellowstone usually come about with hikers stumbling onto a sow with cubs.
Uh-huh. So they want to protect their young, obviously.
Oh, they are very protective of their young.
Well, Jed, I envy you the beauty that you were surrounded with and your knowledge of how to survive there. And I also feel that you've done a beautiful job with this work. It's really quite inspiring. And I hope that you will perhaps consider writing something else someday. But for now, we'll be content with Yellowstone for violin and orchestra. And it's been a delight speaking with you.
Thank you, Jill. It was nice to be here.